Welcome to the Spectrum Policy Podcast, brought to you by Policy Tracker, which provides news, research, and training about spectrum management. In this episode, we continue our special series on WRC 23. The conference concluded at the end of 2023, and the upcoming episodes of our series will focus on the most interesting and impactful decisions made in Dubai and how they will affect the various sectors in the telecommunications industry. Today, we'll be talking about three areas affecting the future of transport: global maritime distress and safety systems, high-altitude IMT platforms, and earth stations in motion. My name is Mirva Villa, and I'm a journalist here at Policy Tracker. With me to share his experience from the conference floor is Turil Aliyev, a senior engineering manager at Axis Partnership. Thanks for being here today, Turil.
Thank you, Mirva. It's a pleasure to be here. So my name is Turil Aliyev. As mentioned by Mirva, I'm a senior engineering manager at Axis Partnership, and I've been in spectrum management and frequency coordination for nearly a decade now. And my expertise is mainly in satellite communication and also some IoT applications. But as you know, when you're a consultant, you deal with a lot of different issues. And for the last 4 weeks, I've been attending the World Radio Communication Conference in Dubai, where we dealt with a number of very interesting issues that will have a great impact on going forward, especially on HIPS, on GMDSS, and on eSIMs. So hopefully we'll be able to cover some of those elements today.
So can you briefly tell us what it was like to be present at a conference that plays such an important role for the ICT industry and, you know, other industries as well, of course?
I would say it was quite tiring. We had a very difficult schedule. We were working from 9 a.m. to like very late till 3 a.m. some days, and it was quite challenging. But it was also rewarding in a sense that you actually see the progress. You actually see how people reach the consensus, and it's quite exciting to know that the work that you do will actually have impact on human life, on the way we live, and on the way we experience internet and different kinds of wireless communications as well.
Great. So let's start with the topics of the day then, and let's start with the GMDSS, or Global Maritime Distress and Safety Systems agreement. There was an agreement reached on the modernization of this system. Can you explain to us briefly, you know, what was agreed and why was it such an important, significant agreement?
Absolutely. So agenda item 111, topic C, was about introduction of a new satellite network into Global Maritime Distress and Safety System. So this, the candidate system was a Chinese Beidou or BDMSS network made of a number of GSO satellites with a regional coverage in China and around that area. And obviously, as with any agenda item, we had a number of issues we had to kind of resolve and find a consensus on. And I guess three key issues that we had were, one of them was spectrum needs. So we need to identify the need for GMDSS traffic. And to see what spectrum would be required to meet that demand, which we had obviously some discussions around that, but we finally managed to find a consensus on uplink and downlink frequency bands. Then the second issue was IMO recognition. So Beidou managed to get this recognition from IMO. I believe it was end of 2021. But it came with certain conditions before they can actually commence the service. So they had a number of operational matters that they had to resolve. And one of the important ones was actually a resolution of interference matters and also completion of coordination, which is basically the cert issue that, I guess it was at the heart of the problem, because the Chinese Beidou system was actually not fully coordinated before the conference, and we had to manage the situation. So there were a couple of NGSO systems that were already operational, and one of them was already providing GMDSS service, and they haven't been coordinated with this Chinese system. So as a result of this, all of this work, we had many late nights on this topic, And eventually, after some bilateral meetings between countries as well, we ended up in a situation where we agreed to modify the regulation, radio regulation, to have this bands in the table that was, you know, identified for GMDSS. And but it was also kind of a bittersweet result, because there was also a resolution that was developed as a result of this work, which was saying basically that before the service can actually start, you know, before Beidou can actually start providing GMDSS service, they had to do complete number of issues. They had to complete the coordination. They have to resolve the interference matters. And that was, you know, that's why it's kind of bittersweet, because it's actually there now, it's available, but they can actually start doing it until they resolve this issue. So it could take maybe 1 year, it could take more years, we don't exactly know. But the hope is that this process could be done quickly, and, you know, maritimers can actually enjoy this new additional system for safety.
That is really fascinating. Thank you for providing all that context. Can you tell our listeners a little bit more about what kind of, you know, real life impact would it kind of have to have these you know, for this service?
The point is, well, when you're trying to provide a safety service, what you need to avoid is to have any interference into your system. So, because, well, you won't be able to risk the human life, so you have to make sure that your system is fully capable of transmitting without any interference. And that was really at the core of the discussion. So we already, there were companies, for example, Globalstar, that claimed that they are suffering interference from Beidou in South Korea, and that was also discussed, and, you know, it was actually submitted to ITU as well. You know, that those are the issues that they have to resolve before they can actually provide the safety service. So you can't really provide a safety service if you are not fully coordinated. That was the full agreement by everybody at the floor.
Is there anything else you'd like to add on the GMDSS before we move on?
I would say I'm actually glad for maritimers that hopefully soon they will be able to benefit from this service. I know that there are already two global GMDSS networks available. So you have, for example, Inmarsat, and you have Iridium that already provide this service. So it's quite a niche kind of service, niche status to have. And hopefully we'll soon be able to see Beidou doing the same, so that we have extra kind of safety net for maritimers, which is obviously great.
Let's move on to our next subject. And it's, of course, about the high altitude IMD base stations, or HIBs for short. So at the WRC, they were allocated 3 new bands, and the HIBs as a service also received a new definition, building on work from WRC 2019, which is the previous conference. What exactly is HIBs, and why was it so prominent on the agenda this year?
So HIBs actually stands for High Altitude Platform as IMD Base Station. So in being like very simple, it's basically an IMT base station on a some kind of aircraft, or let's say a drone, that would be hovering around a certain area, providing coverage from above. But for, let's say, from the user perspective, from the end user perspective, it would be absolutely seamless. So you wouldn't even know, let's say, that you are in the coverage of an IMT base station or a HIBs. It wouldn't really matter, because it's the same technology, really. So the best, I guess, thing about HIBs is that you can provide the coverage where it's quite difficult to put a terrestrial base station, for example, in a mountain or a desert, or it could be an area where it's not financially, let's say, reasonable to put many base stations, maybe because there is not enough population to do that. So, for example, if you have a, you know, some kind of a large event in an area where you don't have a lot of coverage, you can possibly put a drone around that area and cover that certain area for a period of time, and then you can actually move the HIBs into the new area, which is a very interesting kind of complementary solution for MNOs, for mobile network operators, to implement to boost their network. So this is the basic concept of it. And I know that there were some bands already identified for HIBs before. So I think at WRC 2000, There were a few bands that had been identified for HIBs. And there was also a resolution that was providing a technical conditions that HIBs need to meet to ensure the protection of neighboring countries as well. But then at this conference, we had to deal with an agenda item, which was agenda item 1.4, which was trying to identify three different bands for this service. And I guess the kind of interest behind this was interesting as well, because you have different companies, different countries that are doing some pilots, doing some tests to kind of see how HIBs will behave and how it will work. For example, Saudi Arabia did some pilots in their country and published their results on their website on HIBs technology. And also, I'm aware of, for example, Airbus project. Maybe you have heard of them. It's Alto HIBs. And they are basically built a drone that is capable of flying for months on end without any recharge. So they have solar powered batteries, so they can actually fly and stay in the air for many months, which is an excellent kind of vehicle that could be used for HIBs. So seeing all of this interest, and you know, one of the also proponents of agenda item 1.4 was a company from Japan called SoftBank. So they were also interested in this, and they were one of the proponents. So seeing all of this interest, obviously it seems that there is some move, there is some interest in the industry. So which is a great news, and hopefully we'll be able to benefit from the frequency bands that have been identified at this conference for HIBs in the future. So we'll probably see some of the uses of HIBs in the coming years. I was personally actually involved in this work and the technical work at Working Party 5D around this technology. I did some of the studies. I've done some of the contributions to protect some of the services, incumbent services. So I'm quite familiar with the technology, which is a very interesting technology, and I think there is a big future for this. But we'll have to see in the future.
What kind of impact do you see this having, let's say, in the next 4 years?
Yeah, it's honestly quite difficult to say, as you said, because HIBs is not the only solution that would be able to complement, let's say, the terrestrial IMT networks, because you have now a lot of interest around mobile satellite services that are, well, now they call them something like direct-to-device communication. So technically, in the future, we'll be able to have communication from the satellite directly to your phone, which would do exactly pretty much the same thing as HIBs. So it would be somewhat competing technologies, I would say, because they're doing exactly the same thing using different methods. So we'll have to wait and see, but I think at least for the time being, they will be probably deployed in some countries where they have large mass, like kind of areas where there's not a lot of people. And for example, you know, Saudi Arabia is a good example. They have done the pilot, but you know, many other countries as well can actually do benefit from HIBs if they have large territory and they don't have enough people living there and they still need the coverage. So HIBs could be a good solution. But I'm pretty sure that in future, we have, for example, an agenda item that had been developed at this conference for the future WRC, which deals with direct-to-device communications via satellites, so via mobile satellite services. And once it comes through as well, there will be some sort of competition between those two services, which will be interesting to watch.
Finally, let's discuss some of the resolutions that were made on Earth stations in motion, or eSIMs. So we're talking about agenda items 1.15 and 1.16, 1.15, 1.16. And as per agenda item 1.15, the 12.75 to 13.25 gigahertz frequency band can now be used by Earth stations in motion in somewhat limited scope, I would say, for aircraft and vessels, or for Earth stations on aircraft or vessels communicating with geostationary space stations. And agenda item 1.16 added even more bands to this. So what, in your opinion, makes this an interesting change?
Both these agenda items are actually quite interrelated. So they're dealing with the same matter, so earth stations in motions. And as you know, there are three types of them. So you have maritime eSIMs, you have aeronautical eSIMs, and you have land eSIMs. So each one deals with different types of transport. The interesting part of it is that there's a lot of demand, so there's a lot of interest. So obviously, if you're on a plane or if you're on a cruise ship, let's say, you definitely want to have internet, you want to have benefit from that. So obviously there is interest behind this. So many countries and companies are interested. So that means now we had those two agenda items that we had to deal with. And the good news, I guess, is that both of them were quite successful. So they were both, ended up in being kind of this bands being identified for eSIMs, for specifically for aeronautical and maritime eSIMs, which is a very good news. But they both of these agenda items came actually with a resolution attached to it, which, honestly, it was one of the biggest resolutions that I've read, probably. Very detailed, with a number of annexes that trying to describe how exactly this will work, how the incumbent services in band or in the adjacent bands will be protected, these different limits, PFD limits, or other kind of mechanisms that would be able to protect, for example, IRNSS or aeronautical radio navigation systems or terrestrial systems or NGSOs, for example. So that was the kind of interesting part of it. So, and I guess for agenda item 115, one thing that I would like to mention is that band, the 12.75, 13.25 gigahertz band, is actually also planned band. So it can be used by countries to launch a satellite and cover their own territory if you are in the plan. So that means, it was a very sensitive band, a very sensitive frequency band. So that it took a lot of clear wording to make sure that is protected and it won't be impacted or changed or restricted in any manner by eSIMs. So that was kind of the agenda, both of the agenda items in a nutshell. And I think it's a very good positive thing because we all want to benefit from communications when we are traveling on a plane or on a ship. So we want to benefit from that, which is now will be available for everybody, which is excellent news.
And you kind of touched on this, of course, but there, I understand that there hasn't been that much harmonization in regulations on an international or regional level before this conference when it comes to eSIMs. Would that be fair to say?
Yes, because there were actually some bands available for eSIMs to communicate with GSOs. So I think it was in Ka band, like 17 to 30 gigahertz between that range. They had two different bands that was available for eSIMs, but I think there was no band available for eSIM to communicate with non-geostationary satellites, which is now will be available, and it's a great news, I think. So you will be able to use, for example, Ka band to communicate between eSIMs and non-geostationary satellites, which would probably come with less delay than, for example, GSOs. So I think it's a great news.
Overall, when you kind of look back at your experience at the WRC 23 and the issues that were discussed relating to communications to do with transport and mobility, how successful do you think this has been? How has it been overall good news or bad news for people who are affected by this?
I would say, honestly, most of the agenda items were actually resulted in a positive note, which is great. I think especially transport-related agenda items were also quite successful, and I'm sure there will be more to be done in the future, but I think it was a big success, and we already have a number of agenda items that we'll have to deal with in the future as well. So excited to start a new cycle, and I'm glad that this one ended quite well for most people. So that's excellent.
Great. And what are some of the key items you think that or key areas that will be in the industry's minds in the next cycle?
Well, maybe not exactly transport related on this point, but I've followed some of the agenda item 10 issues. So for example, there will be I think around 3 or 4 different agenda items on mobile satellite services. So you have space links between different stations. You have different types of applications of, I would say, of MSS, of mobile satellite service. So you have generic MSS agenda item. You have narrowband or low data rate MSS agenda item. You have also one for D2D or directed device mobile satellite service, which is excellent. There are also some interesting agenda items, for example, on revision of EPFD limits to protect GSOs from NGSO. So basically, agenda item didn't really agree on revision, but they agreed to kind of study it and to see where it goes. So, but there will be no revision at WRC 27. So those are the kind of some of the interesting ones that I remember. But there is a big list of agenda items. I think it was around 19 different agenda items that was approved. And there will also probably be some topics as well. So we'll have a busy conference. And I think many agenda items are related to satellites. And that's quite interesting. As a satellite expert, it's quite exciting for me. So I'm happy that there will be a lot of agenda items related to satellites as well.
So many thanks to you, Turul Aliyev. It has been great to have you here today. And many thanks to you for listening to this edition of the Spectrum Policy Podcast by Policy Tracker. You can also visit our website for more coverage on the WRC outcomes, including some of the topics we've discussed here today. Thanks for listening, and until next time.